This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I'm now joined by David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. David, Bill Belichick is officially the head coach at North Carolina. We have a few more details that have come out since last I spoke to you. Are you still thinking it is not going to work with Bill Belichick in North Carolina?
Connor, I'm still thinking it's not going to work. I'm still thinking it's a crazy idea and just a desperate sort of heave into the wind for North Carolina here. They're going to be paying Bill Belichick a ridiculous amount of money to produce Mac Brown results. Mm-hmm. I think that's the world we're headed towards here. Because do I think that they're going to equip him with enough money to go out and buy a roster that can win 8 or 9 games? Yeah, sure. I'll give you that. I think you can get to 8 or 9 wins in the relatively near future. But do I think that Bill Belichick is going to turn North Carolina into a college football playoff team, which is what you would hope for when you spend this amount of money? No, I don't think that. They're going to have enough money to compete with the top 25 type of programs in college football, but not to be better than them. So I am still not sold. Jeffrey and I had a really good back and forth yesterday about this. You know, he's kind of coming around on it to a certain extent. I'm not there yet, you know. But hey, I'll say this. They're wildly different scenarios, but I was also really skeptical about Deion Sanders working.
Right.
And Deion Sanders, to his credit, in year two has Colorado in a just a really wonderful place. But he also inherited a 1-win team, so he took it a lot farther, right? And he had Travis Hunter, he had Shedeur Sanders. I don't think either. I don't think a player of their caliber is going to be walking through that door at UNC. And I think that's ultimately, you know, what it comes down to. If you don't have the Jimmies and the Joes, like, you know, it really doesn't matter. And they're going to get some talent, but they're not going to get that caliber of talent.
Yeah, you know, I'm talking with Jeffrey the last few days, and I had Jeff Calkins on yesterday, and we got into it about Bill Belichick. And I was curious because he had reasons why he thinks it may work. And that was just kind of a different conversation than we've been having on these airwaves the last few days. And to be honest, I thought he brought up a couple of good points, but it sounds like your bar for success with Bill Belichick at UNC, it's not necessarily winning 8 games a season or 9 games a season. It's making it to the college football playoff, being an ACC champion, you know, perennially, and having, you know, the best talent pool in the ACC. Is that kind of what you mean by you don't think it's going
to
work? Because
my
hot take, my controversial take is I think it's going to go okay. Like, I think that he's going to win like 8 games and they'll have pretty good talent, but ultimately I don't think they'll sneak into the college football playoff.
But you've got to be striving for more than the Mac Brown results, because you're giving him twice as much money as Mac Brown made.
Sure.
You're investing in NIL and in the support staff and in the on-field staff to a much higher degree than you did with Mac Brown, who you ran out of town for being an old coach. And now you hire another old coach, give him a ton of resources, more than the last guy, and then you're going to be okay with the same results that the last guy posted? That doesn't make any sense to me. You're making this investment so you can improve your program, not so you can keep the status quo. And as much as people want to dunk on Mac Brown, He led North Carolina to, what, six straight bowl games? I mean, for North Carolina football, that's nothing to scoff at. And so then you also have to consider what cost to the basketball program, too. I mean, that's a real concern here because, as we talked about the other day, in this era, the athletic department really has a lot of say on the purse strings and which programs are going to get what amount of money to buy their rosters. And so you've got one of the greatest basketball programs of all time there at UNC. Is this going to hinder their efforts at success? You know, that's a concern as well. And so, I don't think that you make this investment and then say, all right, cool, 8 wins, 9 wins. Mac Brown got you 8 wins, 9 wins a couple times, right? So, like, you make this amount of investment, you want a college football playoff return on that investment. And, you know, look, maybe I'll be dead wrong about this. Maybe Bill Belichick has still got it. But I also just have a hard time flushing the scenes and the image of who he was at the end in New England without Tom Brady. And, you know, he's not going to have Tom Brady. So I've got to see a lot before I'm really convinced it's going to work.
He's not going to have Tom Brady, but Cobb, I have good news for you. He's going to have Steven Belichick. So that's got to make you feel a whole lot better. And he's also going to have Michael Lombardi, who, you know, former NFL executive, successful with his time with the Patriots and in the NFL. But again, very much like Bill Belichick, he just doesn't have any experience in college football.
Yeah, if Bronny James helps the Lakers win an NBA title,
hey, he dropped 30 last night. He dropped 30 last night
on 23 shots. But he dropped 30. If Bronny James helps the Lakers win an NBA title, then I'll say, you know what? Maybe Stephen Belichick can help North Carolina win the ACC, right? But no, I don't know. I mean, he's done a good job at Washington as their defensive coordinator this year, but. I don't know, man. This whole thing just smells a little weird to me. It reeks of desperation. And I'm fascinated to see it play out. It's going to be entertaining. Whatever form it ends up taking, it'll either be a colossal success, and we'll all say, "Wow, Bill Belichick, not just the greatest NFL coach of all time, but maybe just the greatest football coach, period." But then or it won't work. And you know, and then after a couple of years, we'll all say, yeah, well, you know, Bill Belichick tried the college football thing, and, you know, we'll all still applaud him for having his Super Bowl rings, but, you know, we'll sort of side-eye this experiment and then say, man, what a weird chapter in his legacy if it doesn't really work out.
I will say, I watched the presser yesterday, and I do think he won the press conference. It won me over in a way. I'm now thinking it might actually work out a little bit with Bill Belichick at North Carolina, but he did say a few things in there that I want to take note. One, no 400-page document. Highly disappointed to find out that the Bible that he presented to North Carolina may or may not actually exist. Knowing Bill Belichick, though, he may just be very, you know, it wasn't 400 pages, it was 401 pages. So that might be, you know, you never know with Bill Belichick. But the thing that he said that I found very interesting yesterday was that it has been no secret that Bill Belichick wants to coach again in the NFL. And when he was asked whether or not he would return to the NFL, if he has immediate success in college or if there's an opportunity to the NFL, he said, "I didn't come here to leave. I feel like I feel like doing it a long time. I'm good to go." Are you buying that Bill Belichick would pass up an opportunity to coach in the NFL again to stay at North Carolina?
Maybe he didn't go there to leave, but if he gets a really good offer, it doesn't mean he won't. I think that's the same. It's the same way for any of us who take a job, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't take a job to leave it, but then if you get a better offer somewhere else, then, well, maybe I'll leave. I think Bill Belichick would approach that in the same way as any of the rest of us would. And so, yeah, I don't know. What's going to change, though, in the perception that NFL franchises have of him by him having, even if he has success, even if he goes 10-2 next season in North Carolina, are a bunch of NFL owners all of a sudden going to say, wow, now I have a different perception of Bill Belichick? I mean, I can't see college success changing whatever it is that is keeping NFL franchises from pulling the trigger on him. But if one of them did, I think he would be a lot more comfortable in that environment. Because one of the biggest kind of sticking points that I have too with Bill Belichick in college is just like, understand he wants to run it like an NFL organization, but in the NFL you have a collective bargaining agreement. In college, the NIL stuff is still the Wild West. You're not dealing with NFL Players Association certified agents. You're dealing with, you know, in often cases, kind of sketchy figures who loom in the background and who are not beholden to the CBA and the way they negotiate. And you know, you're talking about not 53 roster spots, but 85 scholarship spots. Like, there's just a lot here with running a college football organization. And if Bill Belichick, after a year of that, gets a chance to go back to the NFL, yeah, I think he would.
Well, and with the player acquisition thing with Bill Belichick, I don't have any doubt that he's going to be able to maximize whatever talent he has, that he's going to be able to develop whatever talent he has. I just wonder if they're going to have the correct recruiting pitch to these players in the era of the Wild Wild West with NIL. Because when you're talking to college football players right now, you want the pageantry, you want the tradition, you want winning a championship, playing for a coach like Bill Belichick, making it to the NFL. You want those things to be the priorities. But at the end of the day, it seems like every single recruit that we talk to and their decision of why they went somewhere, it all involves NIL and lining their pockets. And if Bill Belichick isn't going to make that a priority for him and his own program, is it going to hinder him in getting players?
Oh, it will. And there, you know, we've heard all the talk. North Carolina's talking a big game about the NIL that they're going to devote to the football program. We got to see dollars like hit the bank account though before that. I mean, because you can say anything, right, to try to get somebody to take a job, but is that really going to happen? They've got to go out and raise that money now, and I think Bill Belichick is going to have to be an active participant in that. And how comfortable is he going in front of a room of boosters and glad handing and telling jokes and, you know, being that guy, right? Like, that's not really who we know Bill Belichick to be. But when you hire somebody like that, you expect them to be active participant in raising that money and sort of getting your program to where it needs to go. And so, like, will he pull his weight in that? Because if he doesn't and they struggle to raise this money, then they're just going to flounder. And, you know, I'll say this too, at North Carolina, the talent wasn't really the problem under Mac Brown. Specifically, it was the defense that was the problem for Mac Brown's North Carolina teams. I think North Carolina will be pretty good on the defensive side of the ball under Bill Belichick. They'll improve a lot on that side of the ball. But who are they going out and getting in this quarterback cycle? I mean, you have to overpay for a quarterback in college football right now. Is North Carolina willing to commit? I'm not joking, Connor. Are they willing to devote half or even two-thirds of their NIL budget for next season on a single player? Because sometimes that's what you have to do in college football to get the results that you want to get. You got to go out and spend $5, $6, $7 million on a quarterback. As absurd as that seems, are they willing to do that? And will that quarterback be willing to go and play for, you know, I mean, who's the offensive coordinator? I haven't seen that yet, right? So it's like, you know, there's still a lot of questions there that need to be answered. I think they'll get better defensively, but you know, the biggest next question for me is who's playing quarterback for North Carolina next season? Is North Carolina willing to pay that guy what they need to pay him, you know, to go out and lure him away from an SEC type of program?
Right. I want to move from college football to the NBA because I'm interested in your take on this. You know, you don't necessarily work in the NBA, but you used to cover an NBA team here in Memphis. Why do you think there has been this huge conversation about NBA ratings? And I know that they're going down this year, but they've already agreed to a record-breaking television deal. So why do you think that people are making such a big deal of the NBA ratings dipping right now?
Well, people are making a big deal out of it because they just like to crap on the NBA, right? It's like, oh, the NBA is woke, or the NBA is in business with China. And, you know, people just kind of want to see it fail. I mean, that's why they're making a big deal out of it. But, I mean, the reality is it's this fractured new reality that we live in from a media environment where you just have a million choices and you're not just turning on DirecTV at night anymore and saying, oh yeah, the guys are on TNT tonight. Let's turn it. Like, you have to be, you intentionally seek out your programming every night. And with everybody cutting the cord, I mean, I'm not surprised at all that their ratings are down a little bit. And shoot, I mean, even the streaming services, man, like, I don't know what you're on, but you know, it's like back in the day when YouTube TV just started, it was, you know, you could get it for $40 a month or whatever. Well, all of a sudden now it's like over $100 a month after all the fees and stuff. And so it's like even that is no longer an affordable option for a lot of people. So I think that's what it is more than anything. It's just we got a billion options. And then, you know, a lot of the options that would make it most natural for you to turn on an NBA game have gotten so costly that some people don't even have access to it anymore. I think that's what it is. I don't necessarily interpret there being a problem with the NBA. I think it's more like a reflection of the media environment.
Yeah, I think a few factors of that. One, it's just damn near impossible to find NBA games now unless you have that package built in. Like, I pay for the FanDuel Sports Network package, so I pay like $19.99 a month. I get every single Grizzlies game, but I only get Grizzlies games. I also have NBA League Pass, mm-hmm. but of course, you know that League Pass has blackouts for your local team, so that's, you know, infuriating for people who can't watch their own local team while they're paying, you know, hundreds of dollars for NBA League Pass. That doesn't make any sense. I think you also have an issue with the people on television talking about the NBA. I love the TNT show, but yesterday, Charles Barkley talking about how the Houston Rockets don't know how to play basketball because it's a different style of basketball than the one that he played. It's like, what are we doing? Your ambassadors aren't, you know, lifting your sport up as they should. You have ESPN screaming about where LeBron James is when the Lakers aren't even in contention this year. But a team like the Rockets and the Grizzlies and the Oklahoma City Thunder are going under-talked about. These young superstars that are up and coming aren't being promoted in the right way. I understand why the NBA has stuck on guys like LeBron James and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant over the last decade. But you've got to be ready for life after these guys. It feels like their careers are coming to an end and their teams aren't as successful right now. So throwing them on television every single night isn't going to bring eyeballs. I also think, we got to be honest about it, the NBA, illegal streams is a huge thing in the NBA because it's so difficult to find these games. So most people just watch the streams and those don't get counted towards ratings.
No, that's a great point. I've been in that boat before. I mean, hand up, right?
Like, absolutely hand up. Yeah.
Dude, I'm blessed. I got a Fubo subscription through work that somehow, whoa, dude, I don't understand exactly
dunking
how
on
it
us.
Works. Yeah, but I got League Pass, and there's no blackout, so like I can watch the Grizzlies anytime, anywhere, which I do, and I absolutely love. I love watching the Grizzlies right now. I'm basically just – like a diehard fan at this point. And I talk about them on here with you guys and with Jeffrey a good bit. And I used to cover them. So, like, I covered Ja. I covered Jaren. In fact, right. I covered Taylor Jenkins' first season. So, like, I do still feel like I have a certain level of connection to the franchise. But I love watching the NBA right now. In fact, I'll watch games that the Grizzlies aren't playing in. If it's, you know, if it's a night where there's not a lot of college basketball, I just like watching it from a basketball point of view. And you know, I think right now you mentioned the marketing problem in the NBA. It's like you only want to cater to the certain to the big market franchises or to the big name stars. Meanwhile, there's really great basketball being played by the Indiana Pacers, by the Memphis Grizzlies, by teams around the league who don't get talked about on First Take. And you know, there needs to be like a greater emphasis within the basketball media landscape of talking about ball. And that's right. Why that everybody kind of latched onto the JJ Redick podcast, right? Because they were talking ball. And that was like honestly over my head, some of the schematic stuff that they would get into, you know. But it's like, man, there is actually like people won't believe this, but it's true. There's like more intelligent analytical discourse on Twitter and on the analysis desk on TV about college basketball than there is about NBA. The NBA, to its credit, has become such an entertainment product, but I think at the same time you kind of devalue the richness of your sport when you focus solely on the entertainment side of it and aren't really willing to go in depth on the back.
The drama of the NBA is the selling point for the NBA. It's on social media. The clips get a lot of views, but the actual games don't get a lot of views.
Yeah, right. But like, if you listen to a podcast or watch a studio analysis show, they're actually going more in depth on the ball,
right?
On the college side than they are in the NBA.
Oh, absolutely. When you watch college basketball games, like on like a Saturday or something, you got a lineup. They're actually talking about the games. They're not talking about the transfer portal and what could happen and the coach moving here and you know this player's unhappy in the locker room. They're actually talking about the basketball games. You feel like you're learning about these teams, and that's why I just feel like most casual NBA fans, they just don't feel like it's accessible to them because all it is about the drama of the NBA. And when they actually get into talking about the games, they go toward these storylines that just don't make much sense. Just tell us about the games. Gabe and I have been screaming for years that we just want the old ESPN back. We want the old SportsCenter back. Just talk about the games. Break them down. Tell us what happened. That's all fans want. They don't want to know about Bronny James all the damn time. They don't want to know about LeBron, you know, skipping out on the team. They don't want to know about Dame Lillard being unhappy and all this stuff. Jimmy Butler maybe having a trade request, maybe not having a trade request. The drama, like the drama between Shams and Jimmy Butler's agent, is a bigger deal than the NBA Cup this week. That's just insane.
I know, right? I'll tell you what, though, we also need more games like that Grizzlies Lakers game from earlier this year. You remember where John Morant, you know, he hit, was it Gabe Vincent? He hit with the too little.
Yes.
And then it started that whole LeBron back and forth. Like, dude, that game was fire. Like, if more regular season games were like that, there wouldn't be a ratings problem because that was, like, high theater, like, wonderful entertainment.
Well, to your point, just the other night, we got a game like that. The Hawks and the Knicks, NBA Cup, action. Trae Young was awesome in that game. He beat the New York Knicks. Healthy sports hate. It's great. He's rolling dice on their logo. Jalen Brunson said, if we don't want that to happen, we got to beat him. And what are people talking about from that game? They're talking about how bad it's going to be a product for the NBA now that the Hawks moved on. They're not talking about the actual game. And I think that's like extremely frustrating for a hoop head like me where I'm like, no, the game was awesome. Talk about the actual basketball game because there were so many interesting things that happened in there. You have Jalen Johnson going crazy. DeAndre Hunter's having a resurgence of a season. Risha starting to turn it on. For the Hawks, he was the number one pick in the NBA, and most people can't even pronounce his name right now. It's just, it's very frustrating. But, Kyle, before I let you go, we got to end it on some good news. Fellow Tennessee football fan, have you seen Ryan Day's recent comments about the tickets?
Okay, are you sure you're not getting duped by the AI?
Am I getting duped by AI? Did I get duped?
There was an AI clip out there of Ryan Day talking about the tickets. Just double check yourself. That's all I'll say.
Oh no! I think I got got by AI. Either way, I'm excited to see that Ohio State fans are beginning to get a little bit worried about how Vol fans travel in the college football playoff. I've already seen that there's a field goal route to the river if Tennessee wins this football game after they plant their flag and, you know, get hit with a felony up in Ohio, which I just find to be quite ridiculous. But I'm starting to, you know, believe just a little bit in Tennessee football against Ohio State. Am I setting myself up for heartbreak?
Well, no, it's funny. I think our For You pages on Twitter are showing us the same things right now. And Connor, dude, I'm excited about this. For the first time as a fan, since 2016, I will be there in Columbus as a fan.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm part of the problem for Ryan Day and Ohio State right now because I'm going to be there. I'm going with my brother-in-laws and a nephew, and I'll be wearing orange, right? I'm on paternity leave from work. I'm just going to have a good time. Like, it's going to be fun. First game as a fan in almost a decade. I can't wait. It's going to be freezing cold, I'm a little scared about that, but. I really do think that there's going to be 25,000 Tennessee fans there. I think that the Horseshoe is going to be a quarter Tennessee fans. And hey, look, I'll be honest. I got in on the Ohio State season ticket holder presale. You know what? They probably should have come up with a better code than OSUFB. That's pretty easy to figure out. You know what I'm saying?
No way. That was it?
That was it. Whereas, like, if you run a solid ticket operation, you send a unique code to every season ticket holder instead of sending out a blanket code that anybody can figure out. Anyway, I'll be there. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be freezing. Will Tennessee win? I have no idea what version of Ohio State shows up for that game. It could be a version of Ohio State that could win the national title. It could be a version that loses by 14 to Tennessee. That's one of the most interesting storylines of the first round to me. What do we get from Ohio State?
I am hoping that the Ryan Day vote of confidence that he got from his AD, the curse of the vote of confidence continues. That's what I'm hanging my hat on that. Because every single time we see an AD give a coach a vote of confidence, something horrible happens right after. So,
well, yeah, and I mean, crossed. If they lose at home to if they lose at home to Tennessee, I mean, I think the hot seat take is warranted, and you got to figure out like where do we go from here,
right?
Because consecutive home losses to close this season with this roster at Ohio State. Man, that's unacceptable. Like, that's below that program standard. And, like, I don't know if he still has that vote of confidence if they lose at home next Saturday.
Well, David Cobb, you have my vote of confidence. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, man, thanks.
That was David Cobb. You can find him, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. He's on Twitter at David W. Cobb. When we come back, we got to dive into the Blitz. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 929 FM, ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. Every day on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we do the Blitz. We got to do it right now. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Washington Mystics owner Sheila Johnson had an interesting quote after Caitlin Clark was named Times Athlete of the Year, saying, "Why couldn't they have just put the whole WNBA on that cover and said the WNBA is the league of the year?" Connor, your thoughts?
Why do they keep doing this? Every single time the WNBA seemingly has had a chance to take this Caitlin Clark baton and run with it, you have somebody pushing back against her. And listen, I'm not going to get into the Instagram stuff and all, you know, that the comments. To be quite honest, I respect Caitlin for what she said. I'm happy that she said what she said. I think it needed to be said. And if you have an issue with it, I think it's a bit odd that you have such an issue with it.
Sounds like a you problem.
But when it comes to the WNBA and how they've been marketing Caitlin Clark and how they have been reacting to the success and the boom of last season, it just feels like they are fumbling this thing. I do not understand it. They keep it trying to turn it into Caitlin Clark versus this, Caitlin Clark versus this, or she's not a part of this. You have one of your athletes, athlete of the year, front page of a magazine, one of the biggest magazines that have ever existed, and your comment right next to it is going to be negative. Why? I don't understand it. You have record-breaking ticket sales, record-breaking interest, record-breaking television ratings. Why push back against it? You've got to accept the new era of women's WNBA and college basketball with open arms. It's the same problem that we're talking about with the NBA and them talking about, well, back in my day. Well, back in my day. Hey, old heads in the WNBA, Diana Taurasi, I'm talking to you. Basically, all of UConn, I'm talking to you. You got to accept these players and accept that they're helping grow your sport. Caitlin Clark is going to be the first of many of a new generation. You got Juju on the way. Paige Becker's on the way. Got a ton of talent in college basketball right now for women. The most we've probably ever seen.
The college women's game right now
it's
so good.
Beautiful to watch. You got Madison Booker at Texas. Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame. You know, Aniza Morrow at LSU. Juju at USC. Paige at UConn. You got parity finally in college basketball.
And we're talking about them coming from the biggest brands in college, not just women's basketball, but college basketball, period. And all of a sudden, it sounds like the WNBA is going to, you know, accept them in the draft as high as they're going to go. They're all going to be top of the first round. And if they perform well at the next level immediately, it's going to be like, actually, I don't really like you.
I just don't understand it.
Doesn't make sense.
I just don't understand it. Caitlin Clark's the biggest star that y'all have had in a very long time. You could argue it's the biggest star they've ever had. And instead of embracing her with open arms and running with it and trying to promote your league positively every time, it's become an argument every single time. Top down. Why? I understand the Team USA stuff. We got into that when that happened. You left her off because of merit. You wanted these players to get... I get it. Whatever. I still think she should have been on that team, but whatever. I understand that one. This, I find ridiculous.
I find it ridiculous.
Don't say, well, the whole WNBA should have been on the cover. Why is it just one athlete? It's because she was Rookie of the Year, by far. She was your biggest star, by far. That's why. You had to move your game into a different arena when you played the Fever. And you're questioning why she's on the cover? What are we doing? You're hurting your own brand by making it an argument every single time. Rising tides lift all ships. And Caitlin Clark is rising the tides for the WNBA right now. She's not the only one. Angel Reese is a star too. I get it. She's not as big of a star as Caitlin Clark. She's just not. You've got to accept her. Please, WNBA. I'm begging you. I've been watching women's college basketball in the WNBA more than I ever have in my life. And Caitlin Clark is one of the main reasons, if not the reason. And you have got to accept that that is what most people are doing. I understand that WNBA has been around for a while. I get it. It has history. And those players deserve respect. Those players have lifted it up for years without the attention that they've deserved. All of that can be true while also promoting Caitlin Clark as your new star and helping move into a new era of women's basketball. But for some reason, every single time there is positive news, there is some sort of resistance. I just do not understand it.
Hate to keep the Blitz on such a negative tone, but NFL Hall of Fame wide receiver Randy Moss had announced that he has been battling a cancer found outside of his bile duct between his pancreas and his liver on Instagram Live today.
Randy Moss announced that he has been battling cancer. It sounds like he is doing well against it. He had surgery. He's going to have chemo. But it seems like he's going to be okay as of now. He said the NFL Hall of Famer added he still needs to undergo some chemo and radiation, but he announced that he is a cancer survivor and underwent surgery after being hospitalized. And we all know that we've been worried about Randy Moss because he popped up on television a few weeks ago. And you don't like to speculate about somebody's health, but something just didn't seem right with Randy Moss. And, you know, for those of you that weren't able to watch him play, go back and watch his highlights. He is, to me, very similar to Wilt Chamberlain in the NBA, where you'll be watching a game and a graphic will pop up about a wide receiver, and it will be like Jerry Rice, which is just a different strategy.
Yeah.
But then you'll see like Randy Moss, like three catches for like 200 yards and three touchdowns, and you're like, what the hell was going on? How was Randy Moss that good? Genuine, like if Jerry Rice wasn't alive or didn't play, I think you can make the argument that Randy Moss was the best wide receiver ever. I think most people might still make that case. Special player.
It's a good case.
I'm glad to hear that he is technically a cancer survivor right now, but he still has a long road ahead of him. So, prayers to Randy Moss. I hope he can stick around for much, much, much longer. I really enjoy him on television. I think he's a calming presence. He actually teaches you about the game. NBA, take notes. So, prayers to Randy Moss. I wish him the best in his recovery. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. This is Connor Dunning on 929 FM, ESPN. Stick around. I don't know if y'all have noticed. We got some new end music for the Gabe Kuhn Show. Shout out to anybody who can name this song. I'm not going to say it. If you know it, shoot me a tweet. But that's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today. I want to thank my guests, Parker Fleming and David Cobb, for joining me. We'll be back same time, same place on Monday, 4 o'clock. Me and Italian George, King George. George, thanks for sitting in with me. For George, I'm Connor. Stick around. You got Grizzlies pregame at 6:30. Grizzlies tip at 7 with Eric Hasseltine. Peace.